I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. Now here's your host, IBJM Ministries Director, John Lawrence.
Greetings to our listening audience, and thank you for joining us today. I'm John Lawrence, Director of Ministries here at IBJM, your host. Today I want to talk about another Jewish mission field, a very important one, which is the United Kingdom. That would be made up of England and Scotland and Wales and then Northern Ireland. Most Jewish people in the United Kingdom have settled in England, actually. The vast majority live in the capital city of London, where there are over 215,000 Jewish people. And predominantly, they are settled in the east end of the city. Other Jewish population centers in this country are located in Manchester, where there are 30,000 Jewish people, then Leeds, where there are 10,000, and up in Glasgow in Scotland, where there are about 6,500. But the Jewish community has been shrinking significantly because of aging and also a very low birth rate there. While there was some persecution of Jews in England in times past, it was much less intense than in continental Europe across the English Channel there. The societal reforms of the 19th century brought great progress for the Jewish people, and in that century under Queen Victoria, England actually had a Jewish prime minister for a good while. And, of course, as they participated actively in industrial development, the Jewish people became a solidly middle-class community in England. Because of the British mandate in Palestine, the country was intimately involved in the partition of the territory over there in the Middle East and in the establishment of the State of Israel. British Jews were key players in the Zionist movement. There continues to be considerable support for the nation of Israel in England in the United Kingdom. The late Abba Ibn, a distinguished British Jew, was a well-known Israeli foreign minister in the 1960s and into the 70s. He eloquently defended Israel's position on the 1967 Six-Day War at the United Nations. The Jewish Chronicle is a national newspaper that is read by Jewish people across the country. Many Jewish schools operate, but Jewish communal life is organized mostly around the synagogues. Britain's leading institution of Jewish higher education is the Oxford Center for Hebrew Studies at Yarnton. About 30% of British Jews are not affiliated with synagogues. They represent a growing secular movement in England that has abandoned Judaism as a religion while still maintaining some attachment to Jewish history and culture. But that's a phenomenon that's happening with many religions in England today. IBJM has labored in England since the early days of its ministry when our founder, Dr. Jacob Gartenhaus, visited there and preached there. But sadly today, we have no full-time workers in this great country. There are no workers there on our part serving the large Jewish population in a very needy place. There is a real need to develop a team in the London area where there are so very many Jewish people, and there are also some good churches there that could be worked with, and then also to add missionaries to these other important Jewish population centers that exist around this country. So would you pray for this need? Would you pray for some laborers that the Lord would send to us who would be willing to go to England and Scotland and maybe elsewhere in the United Kingdom to plant churches in Jewish communities? Would you yourself perhaps consider being obedient and submissive in your heart if the Lord calls you to go? There are so many needs around the world, and we would ask your prayers to help us to pray for laborers for all these places. Thank you for joining us today. And now let's listen to our friend, Brother Mark Oshman, as he comes with today's Bible study.
Welcome back to our radio program. Over the past several sessions, we have looked at Solomon's guidelines for living, as contained in Proverbs chapter 3. He may have addressed these axioms to Rehoboam, his son and successor. For his eighth guideline, Solomon cautioned, quote, "Be not afraid of sudden fear, neither of the desolation of the wicked when it cometh," unquote. In other words, Solomon did not want his son to allow fear to influence his decisions and to govern his life actions. According to Proverbs chapter 29, the fear of man brings a snare. The Old Testament provided several examples in which an individual's desire to avoid offending others led to that person sinning against God. Aaron, the first high priest of Israel, and Saul, the first king of Israel. Aaron and Saul functioned as examples of this mindset. The 32nd chapter of Exodus contained an incident in which the rebellious Israelites demanded that Aaron make idols for them. He complied with their demand. The context of that passage gave no indication that Aaron had ever reflected upon his choices, much less thought the situation through beforehand. As the human instrument through which God sent the plagues upon Egypt, Aaron must have realized the extent of the power that the true God wielded. He assuredly comprehended the unique position that his brother Moses occupied as God's spokesman. Self-interest alone might have convinced Aaron to resist his Hebrew contemporaries and remain true to God and to Moses. However, Aaron failed to foresee the negative consequences of his behavior. He should have realized that Moses, not to mention God, would find fault with his choice to fashion a golden calf. After God executed judgment upon the idolatrous Israelites, Moses called Aaron to account for his failure to control the Jewish nation. The high priest's response betrayed the awareness of his fault. Quote, "Thou knowest the people, that they are set on mischief. For they said unto me, Make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what has become of him." Unquote. Aaron added that, after the Israelites gave him their golden earrings, quote, "I cast it into the fire, and there came out this calf," unquote. Aaron's fear of man led him to sin against God. In addition, it weakened his moral authority amongst his Jewish contemporaries. When Aaron and Moses faced a revolt against their authority, as recorded in Numbers chapter 16, Aaron played no part in coming forth to defend either himself or his brother. Aaron should have feared God instead of fearing the Israelites. He needed to do what Jesus Christ would later command believers to do in the 10th chapter of Matthew. Quote, "Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell," unquote. Had Aaron followed these injunctions, he would have spared himself grief and shame. According to 1 Samuel chapter 13, King Saul fell into the same sin. He chose to offer God a sacrifice rather than waiting for the prophet Samuel to arrive. When Samuel appeared, he asked the king about what he had done. Here was King Saul's reply, quote, "I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash," unquote. Saul then continued, quote, "I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering," unquote. Samuel informed King Saul that that monarch had acted foolishly. Had Saul obeyed, God would have established his kingdom. Instead, Samuel noted, quote, "The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee," unquote. King Saul's disobedience cost him and his descendants their right to serve as the monarchs of Israel. Solomon's words in Proverbs chapter 3 implied that God gave believers a valuable assurance, namely this: those who walk with God need not fear anything or anyone. Here's a practical example of how this principle worked. When the Israelites heard the report of the 10 spies in Numbers 14, the report relating to the existence of giants in Canaan, the people refused to enter into that territory. However, Joshua and Caleb exhorted the Israelites, quote, "Rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not," unquote. Subsequently, the Israelites refused to trust God for victory over the Canaanites. As a result, God sentenced them to spend years in the wilderness. The next generation of Jews chose to fear God rather than fearing the Canaanite giants. Therefore they, not their forebears, entered into the land of promise. In Proverbs chapter 3, Solomon informed his son, quote, "The Lord shall be thy confidence and shall keep thy foot from being taken," unquote. Believers can rely upon God to protect them. David, Solomon's father, knew about that lack of fear that comes from trusting God. In Psalm 27, he penned these words, quote, "Though an host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident," unquote. What constituted the source of David's confidence? He wrote, quote, "In the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me up upon a rock," unquote. David did not fear anything that men could do unto him, because he knew that God would protect him. Over the course of his life, David certainly encountered situations that might invoke fear in him. He spent much of his early adulthood fleeing from the wrath of King Saul, who sought to kill him. Later in life, David had to escape from his son Absalom, who sought to usurp his throne. Near the end of his life, though, David knew that he could trust God to look out for him. As he said in 2 Samuel chapter 22, quote, "I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from mine enemies," unquote. God let his people know that he was their guardian. According to Genesis chapter 15, he told Abraham, quote, "Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward," unquote. That patriarch could confidently deal with the rulers of his day because he knew that God watched out for him. In the earliest days of Israel's nationhood, God continued to reassure them, both personally and through his messengers. When the king of Bashan confronted the Israelites in the wilderness, as recorded in Numbers 21, God told Moses not to fear him. In Deuteronomy chapter number 21, just as the next generation of Jews prepared to enter Canaan, here's what Moses exhorted them, quote, "Be strong and of a good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee," unquote. In Joshua chapter 10, when that leader faced an army headed by five Canaanite kings, God told him, quote, "Fear them not, for I have delivered them into thine hand. There shall not a man of them stand before thee," unquote. God provided the same assurances to the Jewish people of Isaiah's time. In the 41st chapter of that prophecy, God told the Jews, quote, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness," unquote. New Testament characters who trusted God experienced the same certainty during times of crisis. While the ship carrying Paul to Rome foundered in the storm, an incident recorded in Acts chapter 27, Paul expressed no fear of dire consequences. Rather, as he told the passengers of the beleaguered ship, quote, "There stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am, and whom I serve, saying, Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee," unquote. Paul concluded by exhorting the people, quote, "Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me," unquote. God reassured Paul that he would survive that experience, enabling Paul in turn to reassure the passengers of that ship. Thank you for listening to this program. We invite you to return for future broadcasts about Solomon's Guidelines for Living, as contained in Proverbs chapter 3.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150. Or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.